This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 35. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what we say it is. It's books and authors in the fantasy realm. It's everything to do with books and authors in the fantasy realm. Whether you're talking about urban fantasy, epic fantasy, dark fantasy, swords and sorcery, you name it, we try to cover it here on the show and bring you the best and brightest authors and storytellers from every corner of the fantasy book world. Plus, we add in some other special guests along the way, and we'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the episode because we've got a great pair of guests coming up in the next episode after this one. First off, though, as far as I go, I've got a bunch of projects in various stages of completion. I started working this week with a new assistant who will be helping out with the launch of an urban fantasy series scheduled for release in July. I'm really excited about this. This five-book fantasy series was one that was with a publisher, and I actually recently got the rights back to the series from the publisher, and it's kind of been languishing there under their care for the last couple of years, and I think it'll be good to relaunch it under my name and get it out there directly from me, and I can give it an opportunity and give it the attention it needs. I'm really excited about it. Stay tuned for more on that project as it comes closer. That'll be releasing in July. I'm still also laser-focused on the upcoming release of Cyber's Escape at the end of June. It's book two in the Sapiens Run trilogy, and I'll be doing a lot more in the coming weeks to promote the first book in that series. So keep an eye out for any special offers I might have available for you for Cyber's Change, book one in that series. As always, if you're interested in more information on what I'm up to and what I'm doing, you can always check out my fan group over on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, and on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Reach out to me, use the contact form over there, or message me on Facebook, however you want. I try to get back to you as quickly as possible, and I love to hear from readers out there, so please reach out. All right, let's go ahead and get into this episode of the show, and I was joined this time around by Ben Stevens, who you might know as B. Michael Stevens. That's how he tends to be listed as the author of his books. Ben writes science fiction, fantasy, and horror when he isn't busy working on his global escape plan, which is really interesting to hear more about. He lives in Texas with his wife and son in the Stevens House for Wayward Animals. Published in magazines and anthologies, he also has The Goddess Gambit as his first full-length novel, and he's currently wrapping up the third installment of the No Gods, No Masters saga, as well as assembling a collection of previously published and never-before-released short stories. I had a fantastic time talking with Ben. I can't say enough about it, and I look forward to having him on the show again in the future. We had such a good time chatting. Check out this episode. It's coming right up. Ben, I want to welcome you to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's really great to have you on the show today.
Hey, man, thanks a lot. It's great to be here. It's an honor.
Well, so it's kind of fun. Now, I'm calling you Ben, but some people might know you better as B. Michael Stevens. So the B stands for Ben, so that's what you go by. But your author name is B. Michael Stevens, so people might be wondering what it looks like when they kind of go look for you on Amazon or wherever they can find you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself, and kind of fill folks in a little bit about who you are.
Okay, sounds great. Well, I'm a fairly new author. My first novel just came out a couple months ago, and I've only been published before in magazines and anthologies. So I'm just kind of getting into the industry here. But I work full time as a oil field technician, and it's a rather demanding job hour wise. But writing has always been a passion of mine. So I have learned to take advantage of every minute of the day. And I've been getting a lot of, a lot of people tell me that helps motivate them to fulfill their own dreams and and inspire them, because I no joke, no exaggeration. I work an average of 100 to 120 hours a week out on the oil rigs of West Texas. And I'm lucky enough to have a laptop, and I bring it with me everywhere I go. And if I got a 15-minute break, I'm working on some editing. If I get an hour break, I'm working on writing. And I've managed to write this novel the entire time that I've been working out in the oil fields, offshore, on offshore platforms in West Africa, and now on land rigs in West Texas. And so that's pretty much me, is if I'm not sleeping or working, I'm writing and just trying to get these stories down, you know, because I'm sure a lot of other authors and listeners can relate that ideas come to them faster than they can type them down. So it's just it's like a frantic mad rush, you know, kind of thing. I got to get this out. I got to get it out. So I'm a very busy guy.
You know, it's funny. I just recorded another episode of this podcast with another author earlier today as we were recording this. And we actually had the same discussion that there isn't enough time in the day to get all the ideas down, because we get asked the question, how do you come up with ideas for your books? And ideas isn't the problem. It's time.
Absolutely. I know. My wife, she told me that when she was a little girl, she wanted to create an invention that you could, like a helmet that you could wear, and it would take your ideas and just write the book for you. And I said, well, that'd be great. But then if we did that, imagine how much worse the market saturation would be than it currently is. Everybody would have a 20 book deep series. And well, maybe they should.
Well, you know, there's an author craft podcast I listen to with Joanna Penn. And she talks about automation and the advance of technology all the time. And one of the things she touches on is that every year there's a contest out there for a book to scan the bestseller lists, all the words in every book, and then try to write a book that looks like and has the same rhythm and syntax as the bestsellers do.
It's only a matter of time.
And every year the books get a little bit better. They're not there yet, but it's learning to tell story, and you know, kind of crazy. That's, you know,
that's kind of creepy.
We're close to Skynet all the time, right?
Yeah, we really are. I mean, gosh, how are you going to compete with that? You know, wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. So I'm curious. You know, you know, it's funny. My son co-writes one of my series with me. And we're looking to put out another trilogy. We have two out in that series now, and we're looking to put out a third trilogy. But I kind of dumped it in his lap, because up till now I've worked on the most of the first draft, and then give it to him to kind of flesh out and add some things, add some color to, and then we work on the storyline itself together. And he's 25, and I said, you know, you need to. The next one, I'm not going to have time to write. I have other projects I need to work on. So if you want to write another trilogy, that's great. I'll help you come up with the story. You write the first draft, and then I'll edit it and flesh it out and punch it up a little
bit. Brilliant. How cool is it to be able to do that with your son?
Oh, it's awesome. It's a great thing. But, you know, he's complaining he doesn't have any time to write. And I'm going to make him listen to this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, if he follows me on Facebook, I'm constantly posting pictures of sitting. I'm literally sitting in my Chevy Silverado with the laptop on the steering wheel. I'm waiting. They're running casing, and I've got a couple hours while they're running casing, or I've already landed my casing hanger, and I'm waiting for the, you know, Halliburton cement guys to cement the casing in the ground so I can go and install a pack off bushing. And I'm sitting there in my truck, you know, in my hard hat, my mud boots, and I'm just writing. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm in Pecos, Texas. Oh, I got to get this. You know, I could just get 750 words a day, then I could write 3 books a year. I got it all, you know, math on paper. It sounds great, but it takes a lot longer than you think.
It absolutely does. But you know, there's ways. I'll tell you, you're doing exactly the right thing from my standpoint, which is trying to constantly improve. And that's all we can do. I write a lot of words a day, but I'm a full-time author. This is my job, so I treat it like a job. And so I have word goals, but I didn't always write as many words as I wrote today. And you know, you just build up to it. You build up slowly. And mm-hmm. I can remember when it was a struggle to get 400 or 500 words,
mm-hmm.
you know? So
absolutely.
I just started saying, well, what can I do to get what can I do to go from 400 to 500 consistently? What can I do to go from 500 to 750 consistently and mm-hmm. just constantly improve? So you're on the right track. You're exactly that consistent, persistent effort will win out.
And, you know, not only that, the consistent improvement on word count, but one of the things that I had to get over as a big hurdle. And I hope maybe this, other people are going through the same thing, and if they listen to this, it helps them. Is realizing, I had to realize that there are going to be those days when you sit down and you just grind out the, you know, your word count goal, and you hate every second of it because you know in your heart of hearts that the words you're putting out are garbage. You know, they're just forced, and it doesn't sound right, and this and that. But if you do that, and you do it anyway, you don't just like, well, it's the muse isn't here today, and then just quit. Now, if you just do it, you still get improvement. It's almost like time on a bicycle or grinding in a role playing game. You know, you still got the XP. You might delete all those words or start over the next day, but there's something about the building of the neurological pathways. That it's like you're doing push-ups with your brain, you know.
Well, you're absolutely right, and there's a lot to that. I think it has to do with creating a situation where you control your creativity and not the other way around. And you know,
wow. Yeah,
you know, you set the tone for this is now my time to be creative. And even if you don't feel creative, even if you don't think the inspiration is there, you're going to force yourself to write something. That is,
yeah, well,
you're going to force yourself to create, and it may not be your greatest creation, but you're creating, and that puts your brain in that mode easier the next time.
Well said.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with that. I mean, I'm all about like the routine. Like I get up early in the morning and I start writing early and before anybody gets up at my house. And it's nice. All about the routine. I let the dog out. I get myself a little snack and something to drink and, you know, get mm-hmm. set up. I put the news on in the background and turn it way down. So it's just a little bit of a buzz that kind of gives me mm-hmm. white noise. And then I start writing. And I've been doing that for a couple of years.
Well, that's awesome. That's great that you're doing it full time. What a dream come true.
It's, you know, it didn't start out that way. You know, it's been one of those things that's been a little bit at a time, and you're on the right track, dude. I think you're clearly you don't have a problem with work ethic.
Right. Right. Well, and I hope that it holds up the test of time. This year is going to be a good year. People have been, you know, I have a small but loyal following on Facebook, and, you know, they've been buying my short stories that were in different H.P. Lovecraft magazines and, you know, this and that and the other. And I reached out to my current publisher. And I asked them, because I didn't really know what I was doing. All I knew at the time was like getting on Google and looking for open call submissions for different anthologies and stuff. And I had gotten a short story published with this particular publisher before, Superversive Press out of Australia. And they'd done like it was actually kind of weird. It was a political thing. They did a pro Trump anthology and an anti Trump anthology, and they were going to like make them compete against each other. And I was like, I'm not touching politics with a 10-foot pole. You know, I don't want anything to do with that. And but then the editor contacted me and was like, hey, would you write for this? I'm like, well, I've just been invited. That's kind of cool. You know, I've never been invited to write before. So I said, I'll do it, but I'm only going to do it if I can get accepted to the other one too, because I want readers to understand this is an exercise in creativity and not a political statement. And I didn't expect to get accepted into the opposite one, but I did. And I was like, great, let's go with it. So about a year later, I remembered this publisher and I had the interactions I had with him. I talked to him on the phone. He was a really cool guy. And I was like, hey, I noticed you guys don't have any open calls for novels, but you published some. What's the deal with that? And he goes, oh, we don't ever do an open call on novels. It's kind of an invite only thing. And I said, oh, okay, well, never mind. He goes, no, what do you got? I said, are you kidding? You know, I told him, and he said, send me the draft. You know, I said, well, it's not ready. It's just a draft. He goes, I know what a draft is. Just send it. And I said, okay, I'm nervous as heck, you know. And I sent it out to him, and he's like, I like it. I want to publish it. I was like, great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was like a dream come true. And so I get it done. We get it edited. We get it proofed. I hire a cover artist, the whole nine. And I send him the files, and I go, it's done. It's ready. And he goes, great. Let's wait to publish it. I said, what? He goes, let's wait until you're done with the third. And I said, are you kidding me? It was like a gut punch. But then he explained to me, you know, the reasoning behind it. You know, it's like rapid release kind of thing. And I was like, okay, all right, I can do that. And so I just like doubled down on that work ethic that we talked about. And I just made it like before it was just kind of a hobby. And like, this is cool. You know, as a promise to my son, I'm going to write this book because it's based off a story I told him like 10 years ago. And now it became like, I have to do this by this date, right? I feel like kind of cool. I feel like I'm a real boy now, you know, like I have a deadline. So I'm going crazy. And so for like, I don't know, 2 years, nothing really has happened except for a short story here or a short story there. And then this year in 2019, I'm going to have 4 novels come out and an anthology collection of my short stories. So it's like, just bam, 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 knocking them out. Not as good as I could if I was full time or some of these other guys that are putting books out, you know, once a month. But I'm pretty excited about it. I think by the end of the year, I'll have a deep series, you know, going, and hopefully we'll start hooking some readers and then just carry that momentum into 2020.
No, I think that's, you know, the biggest issue I think a lot of people have in this business is comparing themselves to other authors. The only thing you compare yourself to is yourself and your own ability to put out books. You're clearly maximizing your free time to get the most from it. There are a lot of authors out there who work 30 hours a week and complain that they don't have enough time to write. And the other side of that is that there are a lot of authors out there who are, even if they're self-published or published by a small press, they have one book they put out a year and they make a decent amount of money on it. You don't have to be rapid release or book a month or whatever, a book every 2 months or whatever to be successful. You just have to learn what works for the type of book production you're going to make out.
That's right. I think it's, Michael Anderle has said, you know, there's more than one way up the mountain.
That's right.
Know?
Yeah. He's a good friend of mine. He's a nice guy.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I watch him and Craig all the time.
Yeah.
Love their stuff. And I'll be going out to Vegas this year.
Well, that's cool. Then you have to look me up. I'll be there.
Oh, excellent. Well, I'm definitely going to look you up after this and maybe we can stay connected on Facebook or something like that.
Definitely. Definitely. So let's talk about the Goddess Gambit, because we've been chatting about like the, how we write and stuff, but the folks are probably like, what about the book? So,
it's you do a fantasy podcast, and I'm sure most of your listeners are into, you know, fantasy books. And the Goddess Gambit it's been fun and challenging at the same time. It was a lot of fun to write, very challenging to market. And here's why. It is it has got more genres in it than ingredients in a real jambalaya. You know, it's got it's fantasy. It's urban fantasy, but it's not what you would think of as urban fantasy. Okay. It's not modern day urban fantasy. It's not, you know, the Dresden Files or, you know, Jack Bloodfist, kind of urban fantasy. It's urban fantasy in a post-apocalyptic Mad Max kind of future. But then in that post-apocalyptic future, you also have a dystopia thing going on where the human race is kind of this fascist totalitarian thing because they've been misled, and the fantasy races are, you know, they're the X-Men. They're the ones being persecuted. And at the same time, you also have this military sci-fi thing going on because the human race in the book has, you know, advanced technology. I'm talking like Japanese anime mecha kind of stuff, power armor, you know, so it's really just this Heinz 57 of genres, which has made it challenging to market, but it's an absolute joy to write because I'm in that fantasy world where I'm not beholden to laws of physics or hard science, and it's not The Martian, you know, but it can still appeal to sci-fi fans, because I think a lot of sci-fi fans like science fantasy, like Star Wars. It's not science fiction, it's fantasy, and everybody knows it, but we just call it science fiction because it's got blasters and spaceships in it. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And you know, I fall prey to that as well. You know, where I've got a book series that takes place in the near future, but it's urban fantasy, and it's difficult to market because it's clear that there's technology on the cover, even along with the magic.
It's hard.
Mm-hmm. People, you know, people have trouble with it, I think, because of that. You know, it's not my normal stuff. So, you know,
all it's going to take is for one person to make it the next trend. It'll be the next lit RPG or the next reverse harem. But I mean, I could get behind. I mean, give me a Charles DeLint or a Dresden Files kind of urban fantasy in a cyberpunk future. You know, how cool would that be? You know, Shadowrun. Where's the Shadowrun books? Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a highly successful tabletop role playing game. It spawned some video games. Everybody who's into that part of the world knows what Shadowrun is. And well, if they can do it, so can we. If you can have elves hacking into mega corporations and running black ice like something out of a William Gibson novel, then why can't you have a guy in a mecha taking on a kaiju, but you know, there's some magic wielding goddesses in the mix, you know, which is essentially what Goddess Gambit is. It's this human soldier, John. He's true blue. You know, he believes everything he's been raised to believe. It's his duty to purge the planet Earth of all these invasive species, right? My wife's a gardener, so that term came by me easily. And the invasive species are, you know, these characters, different aliens, basically, but they might as well be fantasy people, you know, fantasy characters. I don't explicitly have elves or orcs or anything of that nature, but, you know, there's a red-skinned girl, or there's this family of turtle people that have like big boils on their face, and they ride a shaggy ox kind of thing, like something out of George Lucas, you know. So there's all these, you know, there's all these creatures and stuff, and they come to Earth. They're just deposited here. They don't know why they're coming to Earth. The readers don't know why they're coming to Earth. They just are deposited here by portals. And drew a lot of inspiration from games I played as a kid, like Shadowrun, like Rifts, from Kevin Ciambita, Palladium Games, a lot of stuff like that. GURPS, Mage. So anyway, you know, these creatures are just coming to Earth, and the leader of the Human Republic has got everyone convinced that they're all bad. Now, here's where it's fun, because some of them are bad, like really bad. They'll eat your face off bad. But some of them are just like, you know, like you and me. They just look different. They're just trying to get home. And so John, he graduates from the military academy, and he's gone this, you know, this whole trip of saving the planet in one way. But then he gets roped into, he gets sucked into a plan that's been hatched by a woman named Maya, who is the goddess in the title. And she's actually a terrorist by the Human Republic standards. And so John actually, you know, turns her in. He does the right thing and gets her arrested. And well, I can't go into too much more without spoiling it, but turns out that she wanted, you know, him to get her arrested. And that's how she's going to get close to him. And kind of shows him that the world isn't everything he thought it was. It's not as black and white as he thought it was. And there's more to the meets the eye, and the next thing you know, they're off on the hero's journey, and there's a ton of action. You know, if anybody likes the idea of, you know, robots side by side with magic, this is definitely the book for them. It's got a wonderful blend of all that. It comes out like a nice spice rub, a little bit of everything.
That's awesome. And you know, it's a shame I didn't get a chance to start reading it yet. I usually try to at least start the books before I start doing the interviews, but it got away from me. But it's on my to-read list, and I'm looking forward to it because it sounds similar to, in some ways, to my Delivery Mage series, which is a portal near future fantasy magic type thing where it's basically like the transporter, but he delivers stuff between dimensions. And
oh, cool.
Yeah. And so he does, you know, he doesn't care what he's delivering. He's just got to deliver it. And
oh, you got to send me a link to that. That sounds
definitely
awesome.
I will. Yeah, absolutely. It's just fun. There's 5 books in the series right now. And it's, you know, there's portals opening all over Earth. And his deal is he guarantees to deliver it and get back. And he's got a chain smoking, tech mage elf that like makes all his gadgets for him. And it's just kind of fun.
Yeah. Dude, that sounds exactly like what we're talking about. I love it. And that stuff it just comes easily. It's just fun to write, you know, like I was in the U.S. Army, but I was just a reservist, you know, I never saw any active duty other than basic training. I never got the exposure to properly write like military sci-fi. My favorite military sci-fi writers are all like retired officers or, you know, NCOs from the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, you name it.
Well, like Craig Martell and Jonathan Brazy and yeah.
Yeah, those Richard guys. Fox yep. And Brad Torgerson. Yeah, I mean, I think Brad's actually in the sandbox right now, you know, and he just came out with another series published by Bayon, and it's just fantastic, you know. But so I can't really, you know, I have a hard time with the, you know, I have to spend a lot of time Googling ranks and what does bivouac mean and, you know, but if with a fantasy stuff, it's just the world's your oyster. You can do, to me, it's all, you have no limits but your imagination. You know, and I love it. And I absolutely love it. And I like the idea of like you said, the chain smoking, you know, tech elf. I mean, that's just awesome. That's just cool. You know, I like doing new things. And there's plenty of stuff out there that is, you know, everybody says, okay, it's been done, but it hasn't been done by you. True. But there's plenty of great stuff out there I can read. If I'm going to write something, I'm going to do something, try to do it new, you know, something that's mine. No.
Yeah. No, I mean, you've got to own it. And you know, you've got to have passion for what you're writing or you're not going to write anything worth reading. Yeah. And so, you know, there's such a thing as writing to a market to a certain extent, but you've got to write something you're passionate about that fits into that market. If you're not, then find another market to write to.
Gotcha.
But yeah. In the meantime, yeah, I still write stuff I want to write. I still write other stuff that maybe doesn't fit quite as well, but fits an idea I had that has to come out.
Right. And I've learned a lot along this journey. And this is like I said, this is my debut series, my debut books. And I've learned a lot along the way, but I'm at the point now where I'm like, well, I'm invested. I want to finish this series and then I'm going to do something new. And when I do something new, I might make more of an effort to write to market because now I know what that means, you know. And there's an urban fantasy writer, O'Kara Brumley. I'm not sure if you know of her. She just released a series called like Woe to a Fairy.
Oh, wow. I don't know her, but I'm going to have to look it up.
She's on fire right now. She's just doing great. And she only lives like 2 hours from my house. So we're both Texan and I talk to her regularly and, you know, she's doing great. She's doing great. But she said something in a Facebook group, one of the many writer groups that I'm sure that you lurk into like I do. And it says she said that writing to market is not magic. You know, it's not selling out. It's customer service. That's and she explained how it's customer service. It's like your customer wants a product, and you can if you're a cook. And if somebody expects, you know, they have a certain expectation when it comes to Italian cuisine. It doesn't mean that you're somehow shoehorned into not being able to explore your skills as a chef if you choose to open an Italian restaurant, right? You can do like well, the books that we just talked about, your book, your Portal Tech, you know, or No Gods, No Masters, my series. You can blend things and still meet your reader's expectations. It's like I've gone to many, you know, I went to a Korean Mexican fusion restaurant and I had bulgogi tacos and it surprised me because I'd never had anything like it before.
And aren't they delicious?
Oh, they're amazing. Amazing. Yes. Yeah. And so, I mean, but so that if you look at writing the market as customer service then and not some sort of like selling out, I think that's a much better attitude to have. And I fully intend to do that in the future. But for now, I'm just going to finish this series. It's, like I said, I'm trying to stay true to the story that I told my son when he was a child and fulfill a promise to him. And once that's done, it's done. I'm good. I have a day job. If it's a success, great, you know, and it's been a mild success so far. We're selling a couple copies a day. We had a really good launch and, the sequel is coming out any day. And it's more, it leans more into the urban fantasy elements and it backs away quite a bit from the military sci-fi aspect. And I don't know how readers are going to take that, you know, because in the first book, Goddess Gambit, there's literal battles between, you know, demons and mecha, you know, robot, cyborg girls against monsters made out of garbage. You know, there's this like poltergeist thing that possesses a pile of garbage. And this Lucy, one of the characters, she's a cyborg warrior woman, you know. So you have all this kind of high tech kind of stuff in Goddess Gambit. And there's still a lot of that in the whole series. But in book 2 and 3, you really kind of get away from it, and it doesn't come quite back to it until book 4, the final book. The book 2, you know, it's Ruin Hell. It should be out any day. It really goes into more of the vampires, more classical urban fantasy kind of elements. And so now you've got your cyborg warrior woman fighting vampires, and you've got the goddess and John, the super soldier, from, you know, with his super soldier rail guns and stuff fighting vampires. So it's a little bit more traditional urban fantasy elements. And I'm curious to see how the readers accept that or don't, you know. Looking forward to the first review here.
Oh, it sounds great. And folks are going to look for that. Now, what's the title of the second book?
It's called To Rule in Hell.
Okay.
Book 2 of the No Gods, No Master saga. And To Rule in Hell comes from the saying, it's better to rule in hell than to serve in heaven.
Well, there we go. Well, that sounds awesome. And folks should look for that. And as well as The Goddess Gambit, which is book 1 in your series. Where do you like to like catch up with folks? Do you have a way that they can reach you online, that they can chat with you if they want?
Absolutely. You know, I have a website. I don't take care of it as much as I ought to. It's quite simple. It's just bmichaelstevens.com.
Well, it's not like you're busy or anything, dude.
Yeah, I keep telling the wife, I said, I can't wait to write that bestseller, and then I can hire a personal assistant, you know. But yeah, I'm doing it all myself. I can't get anybody on board. But, I have a website, and they can go there, and there's, an email address attached to that. And so they can email me that way if that's what they prefer. Anyone who goes to the website will also, there's a pop-up to subscribe to my newsletter. And anyone who does that gets a free short story that's set in the same universe. I need to update that because I got a second short story to add to the mix. It's another No God story. But they can also follow me on Facebook. And I'm like too many Americans. It is a vice of mine. I'm on Facebook all the time, even at work. I'm constantly checking it. And I have a writer page there with about 600 something followers. But, you know, only so many of them see it unless you pay anymore. So
yep,
probably going to start a group someday, you know, we'll see how this series goes. And if there's enough people, enough interest, we can start a little group or something like that where it's easier to talk.
Sounds awesome.
But I also, even my personal page, just Ben Stevens, I accept most friend requests that come my way. Unless people are just absolutely belligerent, you know, I'm a pretty friendly guy and pretty easygoing. I get along with people from all walks of life.
Sounds good. So that's bmichaelstevens.com. And you can also find B. Michael Stevens, author, in Facebook as well. And so people should look you up. And it's great having you on the show. And I look forward, maybe when the series is complete at the end of the year, you can reach out to me and we'll get you back on the show and kind of talk about how the year's gone for you.
That'd be fantastic, James.
Well, awesome. Well, listen, thanks so much for coming on. And I really mean it. I want to have you back. And if nothing else, we can sit and chat a little bit more about how we write and how you somehow managed to find time to get it all done.
That sounds great. Send me your links. I'll look you up on Facebook and I want to check out that book. And I'll be that way we can stay in touch and maybe have a pint or something when we get to Vegas.
Sounds good.
Outstanding.
That will wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. If you haven't done so already, make sure you catch up with us online for a lot more from our parent community over at the Fantasy Focus Group on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com, where you'll find this podcast, articles, reviews, and print interviews with authors all there on the website. Also on the website for the podcast episodes, you can also subscribe to the show to make sure you don't miss them, whether you're using your favorite mobile device to subscribe, apps like Stitcher or TuneIn, and even subscribe by email if you want to. Just go ahead and over there and find the links to do that right on the page below the audio player at the top of the page. We have some pretty awesome guests coming up, and I alluded to it in the beginning of this episode that we have a pair of great guests. We have some audiobook narrators, Annalise Rennie and Roberto Scarlato, coming on the next episode. They are fantastic narrators who've done a lot of fantasy books in a variety of fantasy genres. And we just talk a little bit about the challenges associated with bringing rich fantasy worlds to life with their voices. And I hope you enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun to record that episode with the two of them. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and on my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book if you want. Just sign up for the newsletter in the right-hand column. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Come back here for the next podcast. And in the meantime, remember to keep your eyes open out there, because there's magic all around you.